Fab Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Man, what a night. Holy cow. I'm playing hurt today. I don't know about you guys. I was up. I watched it. Who didn't? Reruns of Seinfeld. No, just kidding. The Royals and Mets last night. I don't know where to really start with that. We have Pedro Gomez coming on with us from Kansas City in about 15 minutes. And I don't know. Eric's running around behind the scenes here working on the TV show. He'll jump in here in a second. But I'm not sure where to start today on the World Series game last night. It was the longest World Series opener ever. My son's birthday party was going on, 10 to 11. So you have to pay attention to that if you're a guy, right? I mean, it's your son's birthday. And it's my youngest. So I'm paying attention to it. But when the TV went to black and I saw guys in studio and I saw technical problems and then an international feed and I'm hearing Matt Vasgersian and not Joe Buck. And then I'm seeing just complete disorganization. It's like us every day, except I was seeing it on the national stage playing out last night. It was like cats and dogs sleeping together and all that stuff. The line from Ghostbusters. It was complete chaos around the World Series. There's an inside the park home run. I'm sitting there and just saying, that's an inside the park home run. Forget about cake and ice cream and presents. It's an inside the park home run. And then Volquez's dad. Did he die or did he not die? Or if he is dead, does the guy pitching know that his dad is dead? So this is playing out on social media last night. Now I want to talk to Pedro about this because ESPN went hard with the story on Twitter that the dad was dead and that Volquez knew. And then there was, well, no, he doesn't know. And on the Fox end, it was the wife of Volquez telling the Royals and Mike Swanson, their director of PR, used to be with the Diamondbacks, who I know very well, that don't tell him. So Fox doesn't broadcast that the pitcher's dad is dead. But yet I'm sitting here looking at all this as it's going on through the night saying, is the dad dead or not? And does he know or not? And why is Fox not saying if the dad is dead, if the pitcher knows the dad's dead, unless the pitcher doesn't know the dad's dead, but the dad's dead? And then I get into this whole Jacob deGrom and Johnny Cueto thing tonight, and all I'm seeing today is that two guys have hair. Now, maybe I'm follically challenged. No, not maybe. I am. But I think there's more to the game than Cueto and deGrom and their hair, their, you know, what they look like. I don't care. All I know is last night was extraordinarily entertaining. I had people that were texting me about the TV show, and I'm thinking, nobody is watching us tonight. It's fine. It happens. It was a great show, but I got a truck that's on fire. They can't stay on the air. They look like complete fools and nincompoops. So who wouldn't want to see that play out? You just jumped in here from the TV show. Eric,
yeah, I
jumps
did.
On board.
Yeah, I do like 15 different things.
No,
here
I know.
In the mornings.
I know. And I treat you like a slave labor here. I know. So were you in the same boat as me, just wanting to see what the next train wreck was last night as it
yes.
was going on?
Yes. I went out to a public establishment last night to meet a friend, and
he was drinking and got
they had
just
the,
hammered.
Nope. They had the game on, and it wasn't like a Royals bar, but the people there were clearly pulling for the Royals, which I thought was interesting because there are so many New Yorkers out here. You would think that the general consensus would be that they want to see the Mets win, but
where I was. Yeah, okay.
Royals. But yeah, it was a crazy, bizarre, you know, I had the game on. I was kind of doing stuff around the house, and I just walked around the corner, and I was like, that's not Joe Buck.
Yeah.
That's not. And somewhere I went upstairs and came down, and then like Joe Buck was like magically gone, and they had someone else on there.
It's not that Joe Buck is Vin Scully to me. He's fine.
No, but his voice is so distinctive.
Sure.
Like you just like, that's
sure.
Joe Buck, you know.
And he sounded agitated and bitter as it was going on.
Yeah. And I honestly thought that Vasgersian did a really nice job. And
sure.
Fox covered their butt. I mean, that they did the best they could. Sometimes these things happen.
When a truck goes on fire,
yeah.
And you lose your backup your backup generator and you have to evacuate a TV truck, guys, it would have been very entertaining to just have Fox, you know, like Ken Rosenthal is their insider, go stick them out in front of the truck. If you want to know why we're not on the air right now and why there's mass chaos and Joe Buck looks pissed and sounds unhappy and grumpy, it's because our truck behind me. Like if we're in TV news, oh, it would have been great. Local news, go stand in front of the truck that's on fire. Don't even help them out. This is what we want to see. If there are spinning lights, please adjust your shots so you can get the crime scene tape and the spinning lights. It's great local TV. This is what, and I'm not saying this, is what we were told through the years. This is what you all are supposedly wanting to see, which, of course, is not the case.
I wonder if Fox had a camera inside the truck because they do that sometimes. Can you imagine if they got that footage of like the people there? Like they're all, you see all the screens and they're all, there's 4 or 5, 6 people working on graphics, things like that. And all of a sudden,
trying to think if we've ever had,
not something to joke about, but since no one was hurt, everything
since no one was hurt, but I'm trying to think. We had a meltdown one time at Channel 3. I had a meltdown on the air. I wasn't throwing stuff. I had a laugh attack. We used to do this show for Tucson that was just a train wreck. Somebody, of course, in management had this brilliant idea of, well, let's just do a newscast for Tucson and Phoenix, but no one in Tucson will know. Of course, we're mispronouncing names all over the place because we don't care. And we're going to have a crew in Tucson do all the technical stuff. Great. It's like, I don't know, weekend, overnight people that don't want to be there that are in Tucson. Those of you in Tucson, sorry. That's just a fact. So I'm doing this story, some local story. They would shoot everything. They would write the scripts. I never read scripts. I just go do my thing. I see pictures. I react. That's TV. In the first inning, no, let's have some fun with this. This is sports. This is not brain surgery. And so they sent up this story on some softball player. It's fine. It's Tucson. I don't care. I just have a show to do. And I'm working on my show for the 10 o'clock. And they show this, it's a softball pitcher, and they go to the video. Let's go to the video. And her arm gets stuck while she's pitching. The video freezes. And it's there. And I'm like, yeah, she's fast. I mean, she's really fast. If I were to show you how fast, if her arm would just follow through and nothing's moving on the screen. And all of a sudden in the screen, it's like somebody behind the scenes in Tucson said, we're just going to freak out. And they push every button. It goes from like the softball girl to Sean Miller's picture to a Wildcat logo to something like within a span of 6 seconds. And I come back and I'm just kind of laughing at this point because it's a joke. We all knew the show was a joke. Nobody's watching it. They just want to run commercials. And I look at right in the camera and say, what do you want? It's Tucson. I can't apologize for this crapola that you're watching. And so you get yourself in that spot. Last night, much grander stage, but I actually felt kind of good about it. Hey, look, even the highest of high, and Eric pointed this out to me this morning, the Super Bowl, when it went down at New Orleans, those poor guys don't know how to ad-lib to save their lives. Like, oh my gosh, we are off script and we have to do something, anything? And there was some of that last night. Let's go back to, you know, we think we can go back. Those guys from Fox Sports 1, we think we can go back now to the stadium. And then they go, well, no, we can't go back to the stadium. It's like, okay, what are you guys in, Des Moines? This is supposedly the biggest show on earth and you're just crashing and burning. And then you're supposedly holding back information on the dad being dead or not for the starting pitcher. So it had everything. And Pedro's going to be with us a couple minutes. Most days today being October 28th, most October 28th or thereabouts, this show would be talking about the Phoenix Suns having their home opener and opening the season. And we would have on Paul Coro, we'd Chase Charles, we'd probably try to do something on Hornacek. We'd put it all together and we would just go up against the wall about how this is going to be the year. Instead, on my guest sheet today, we have Pedro Gomez from the World Series. We have Brad Edwards, college football insider, who's one of the best in the business with ESPN. And we have Michael Fabiano, because most of you care about what's going on with your fantasy team, although some of your teams have just flamed out. The Suns have just become this thing that's kind of there, and it's on them, you would think. It's on them to please go give us a reason to acknowledge you exist, even on opening night. When there's Groupons that are out there for Steve Nash night going into the Ring of Honor for Friday night, this was pointed out to me by somebody close with the Suns. Yeah, you can go on Groupon and get tickets to Steve Nash going into the Jersey night. Is it Ring of Honor? Are they doing Ring of Honor for Nash? I don't even know. I just know they're acknowledging him on Friday night. And he doesn't even want to be with the organization. He's with the Warriors now as a consultant. I'm not sitting here saying anything out of school. People don't care. Now, when the value of the franchise is worth almost $1 billion with a B, and when the owner bought it, it was worth $420 million, and he hasn't made the playoffs in 5 years, but the value of the team has doubled.
And yes, Ring of Honor on Friday.
It's Ring of Honor. Okay, so he's going to the Ring of Honor, which, you know, Ring of Honor is usually a gigantic event. When people go into the Ring of Honor, it's a huge deal, and it's not sold out. You know, it's and I don't blame this on, well, the Cardinals have been really good and nobody else has a chance because it's the big bad NFL. I don't buy that. I mean, this is, it's kind of like, and I get upset because I feel like I'm just a broken record for the last 5 years that when you drive the thing into the ditch and you can't even sell out Steve Nash going to the Ring of Honor night, there's a problem. There's a problem. They open the season tonight against Dallas. Home opener is tonight. Opposite the World Series. Good luck with that. I did watch some last night. I got to tell you, when I watch Derrick Rose drive the lane in games now, I get queasy. I get very, very uncomfortable because I'm just imagining him grabbing a knee or an ankle or something. And I watched that last night. And then Steph went crazy last night. Steph Curry had 24 in the first quarter against New Orleans last night, against Alvin. He was fun. He was fun to watch. All right, Pedro is going to join us next. He's going to answer a lot of these questions about the death of the dad, the television stuff, even though it's not his network, and much more. Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst in Kansas City at the World Series. He joins us next. I'm Brad Sussmat.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Here now is Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst. He joins us every week in Kansas City. When did you get back to your hotel? I'm assuming this morning from last night's game. It was this morning, right?
It definitely was. It was 2:45 Kansas City time once I got done with all my post-game duties.
And when you were trying to figure out which post-game duty, was it Volquez's dad? Was it the inside the park home run? Was it the power going out? Was it the guy that wins in a walk-off? Was it the battle of hair tonight? I mean, Pedro, for a game one, my gosh, there was a lot of angles last night.
There, absolutely. I mean, redemption with Eric Hosmer, Eric Volquez losing his father, you know, earlier in the day. The very first pitch of the game going for an inside-the-park home run. The Mets lockdown closer giving up a titanic bomb in the bottom of the ninth to tie the score. I mean, you talk about just storylines and drama. You're right. This game had it all. I was more fixed on the Volquez angle, so that's what I was doing. But, you know, I was also in the Royals clubhouse getting sound on Escobar's inside the park home run, on Hosmer, the redemption. I mean, you name it. That's as crazy a game one as I've ever seen.
Okay, so let's go to Volquez then. So Fox is being criticized for not reporting that Volquez's dad had died. And what I'm unclear on today, just because I'm just a fan watching, he did not know. It was his wife that called the Royals. Mike Swanson, who you and I know very, very well, one of the best in the business, told Fox, look, this is what's going on. The wife doesn't want it reported. That's what I was told. Now, is that exactly what you were hearing and reporting?
No, I mean, that part did happen. But the reality is that, you know, we have a guy that works for ESPN Deportes.com named Enrique Rojas, mm-hmm. who is Dominican, who is as wired in with anything going on with Dominican players as there exists in terms of reporters. And he was able to talk to someone earlier, like right before the game. And Brad, I'll tell you, it's an unimpeachable source. And that person told him that Volquez absolutely knew before he arrived at the ballpark that his father had passed. Mm. Now, Fox not reporting it, you know, that's kind of understandable because they weren't able to get the confirmation that we were able to get. The reality is that our resource with Enrique Rojas is superior to probably anything that any other news outlet has when it comes to Dominican baseball players. So we were able to confirm that Volquez absolutely knew before. And, I don't doubt that the Royals are telling the truth. At least I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
There is absolute reason to believe that Volquez knew and decided, you know what, it's game one of the World Series. This is what we were told. And he said, I'm going to go out and pitch. And if you notice one thing, Brad, about Volquez, over the years, he is absolutely one of the happiest-go-lucky guys that there have been in baseball. A great teammate everywhere he's been, whether it be the Reds, the Pirates, the Dodgers, and now here with the Royals. He is always, always one of the friendliest and the most well-loved players. Always backslapping guys when he leaves the, each inning and mm-hmm. laughing and getting up and just telling guys what a great play they made. And if you notice last night between innings when he was walking from the mound to the dugout, he was very solemn. His head was down. These are all indications that he absolutely knew.
Okay, so, and he did not, did he speak afterwards or did he leave?
He left the game. The game went 14 innings.
Right.
And the Royals said, just go. Shower, get your treatment, and leave with your family. Go. So he was gone long before we all came down to the clubhouses, and rightfully so. My understanding is that he is going to, or probably already has, gotten on a plane today here in Kansas City and is flying home to the Dominican Republic.
Mm-hmm.
And he will be back for Game 5 in New York when the should there be a Game 5. But he will be back with the Royals once he goes back home to be with his family first.
So there could be a cover-up here by Fox. I mean, they could just be not wanting to, as ESPN went out and had the story, they could have that type of story that we would not want to report something on a television and Volquez maybe walking through the clubhouse and hearing it on television for the first time. No human being would want that. That's plausible here, and that's maybe what
Absolutely.
Happened last night.
Without question. And that may very well be what led to the editorial decision. There's no doubt about it. But when you're tweeting things out to 500,000 plus people who follow you.
Yep.
I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about people that work there. Then it's the same thing as reporting it on television.
Correct. No, I agree with you on that. The inside the park home run. So take me back on that one. Your seat's not even warm, right?
And no, exactly.
and you're seeing this right before your eyes.
And I don't know that anybody really saw what was happening because, when Cespedes did kick the ball, it's up against the outfield fence and it's kind of rolling around like a puck, in one of the corners or one of the edges of an ice rink. So
sure.
It's not like everybody can see what's happening. All of a sudden you just look and they're still chasing the ball and Escobar is being waved around by Mike Gerschle, the third base coach. And it's like, he just scored standing up. There wasn't even a play at the plate. There wasn't a throw to the plate. This is amazing. The first pitch of the game. And, you go back and you see the replays and, hey, the center fielder is the captain of the outfielders. And I know that Cespedes has been playing a lot of left field since he got to the majors and only started playing center field after the trade to the Mets.
Mm-hmm.
But, a center fielder has to take charge there. And so, that's a ball that's on him. It's not an error. It's a very difficult play, but it is a center fielder's ball.
Talking with Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst. He is in Kansas City. Game number two is tonight with the Royals and the Mets with the Royals up a game. So we have the battle of hair tonight, Hairgate, whatever. So, Jacob deGrom admitting he's going to get a haircut ends up making it on the front page of lots of websites, including ESPN's. I don't know. I just want to know about the game, please. But there is this.
Yeah, I know.
There is this fascination with DeGrom and the Johnny Cueto, who's cut their hair more recently. I hope you're not having to report on this type of stuff, but it is out there today in full force.
It is. No, I'm more concentrating on the actual baseball that is to be played, and the fact that both bullpens could be very thin tonight because of the 14 innings. Thankfully I'm more on that. I'm not necessarily doing the Vidal Sassoon part of this broadcast. And you know, I'm just fine sticking to the baseball portion.
The DeGrom is pitched on the big stage, so I don't think that this means anything when people say, "Well, it's postseason and he's a kid." No, he pitched against the Dodgers. I mean, come on, those are big games. Cueto, this is like a validation of his trade, right? I mean, tonight he needs to show something.
Without a doubt, and it's a big game in the sense that, you know, he's an impending free agent, and should he have a great game, well, that's only going to bolster his position in free agency.
Mm-hmm.
But should he stumble again, which he has considerably through the month of September and October for the Royals, well, it just throws up flags. It's not to say that he's not going to still receive an enormous contract in the offseason, but it may not be quite as large as if he were to have a Johnny Cueto-type game that he's had for the Reds over the last couple of years and just, you know, lock down an opponent. And so there's definitely, you know, some pressure on Cueto to deliver. I would say there's more pressure on Cueto than DeGrom tonight, even though the Mets are the ones down 0-1 in the series.
Sure. No, I would agree with you on that. Royals need to win at home, so and Cueto needs to pitch well. So when you see teams that lose marathons like last night in 14 innings in postseason play, how does it impact them? Versus regular season, it's one thing on a Monday, you lose 14 innings, you come back the next night, you're going to be flat probably. In a World Series, though, a game as mentally taxing as last night, do you ever see teams come out flat in game two?
It can happen. There's no doubt. I think the fact that the Mets are so young is going to help them. If they were, you know, they're kind of like oblivious to the position that they're in. And, you know, the fact that it was an error to start that 14th inning by David Wright, who's one of the few veterans on that club, that led to the loss. You know, Wright is more than capable of swallowing it and owning it and taking it off of his teammates. But having said that, you know, they know that they're in a hole. And they know that they do not want to go back to Queens down 0-2. So, you know, these are all the things that make seven-game series so fascinating.
Sure.
Because, you know, 0-2, going back to Queens is not an enviable place to be, especially, you know, you got a young gun like Yordano Ventura starting for the Royals in Game 3. We all have seen his immaturity on the mound, but he does have an electric arm. He does have the type of arm that can go seven or eight innings and allow only two or three hits. He also has the capability of issuing a walk in the first inning and blowing up and, you know, losing his comportment and being out of the game in just a few innings. So, but if it is 2-0 Royals, wow, does that put a lot of pressure on the Mets? And, that's definitely a storyline to watch for tonight. How will the Mets react after, you know, I don't want to say blowing it, but hey, they had a 4-3 lead in the ninth inning with the, you know, the best closer of this postseason so far on the mound. And Alex Gordon absolutely took him to the moon with that home run in the ninth inning.
Yeah, we're just hoping that the picture stays on the TV tonight, you know.
God, I know. And yeah, one point it came back, and I had sent out because there was a monitor where we were watching, and it was on a 28-second delay, which, I mean, in this era, to be on a 20, you know, if it's 1954 and it's the Brooklyn Dodgers playing, that's one thing to be on such a delay. But in this era of instant technology, to be on a 28-second delay, that's unheard of. You know, Fox was obviously, look, there were circumstances out of their control. I mean, when a truck catches fire almost and a backup generator blows up, hey, that's out of their control. That's not something that you ever prepare for. You're prepared because you have the backup generator. But when they both go, what are you going to do?
Yeah, we would have preferred to see you out in front of the truck and the generator on fire and saying, this is why this isn't working, you know. I mean, no offense to the Volquez angle, but, you know, put a sideline reporter out there for the, you know, breaking news, Pedro Live. This is why you guys are seeing black and seeing guys in studio, because Fox's truck blew up. We want fire and people running for their lives. So.
Yeah, my understanding is they actually evacuated the truck.
Yeah,
because there was immediate danger. So, you know, obviously lives come first.
True.
So you're not able to start to get working on getting transmission back up when you have to evacuate.
All right. I don't know how we can top this tonight, but I will let you go, and I appreciate your time as always. Thanks.
Brad, take care.
You got it. There's Pedro Gomez in Kansas City. Game one of the World Series. Done, finished, just amazing last night. Game number two is tonight. Sports360AZ.com. AZ Central Sports, we partner with the Arizona Republic. Michael Fabiano is going to join us in today's show, and much more as we continue on. Let's talk more about Arizona State, Arizona, and the state of the state in the Pac-12, and also the champ game that will be here in Arizona, in Glendale, in mid-January. Brad Edwards, good to have him back on board. ESPN College Football Insider, one of the best in the business. Good guy, too, comes on with us quite often here on the program. Thanks for coming on board right off the top, Brad. Let's start with the state of the state of Arizona, Arizona State this season, from your view.
Ouch. Is that enough? No, I think I'm as confused as most people about Arizona State and exactly what their problem is. And there's no question that offensively something's missing. They're not as explosive as they really should be. I don't know how much of it you can put on the quarterback, but certainly even in a small sample, I thought because it was against conference opposition and he looked so good last year that Mike Bercovici would be one of the better quarterbacks in the Pac-12, and maybe a lot of it's not his fault. There's so many things that you know that go into success on offense. I think there's no question they're missing Jalen Strong, but that's part of football. You know, you've got to reload, and you got to be able to have the next guy up whenever a star player leaves. So yeah, that one's been kind of mind boggling to me. Now, obviously, they did have the big win over UCLA, for whatever that's worth, and I think it shows that they can play well, that it is inside of them. But they've so rarely played like a team that is capable of winning games like that, and so that's I think that's a disappointment for sure. Arizona, I was not expecting them to be as good as they were last year, so not as big of a disappointment to me. But at the same time, I think when you look at what's happened to that defense in the last few weeks, it really is. Really is kind of jarring, because as much as we focus on the offense with Rich Rod, I think that was one thing that over the previous two seasons had been a very pleasant surprise for them, is that they had played much better than people would have expected on defense. And I think it allowed them to improve as a team, and now the defense seems to be backsliding. And look, I think both of them are average teams, middle of the road teams in the Pac-12, and that's not necessarily what we expected going in, but just kind of assessing it at the midway point, I think that's what they are. They're just they're teams that could go to a bowl game, but that's about the extent of how good they'll be this year.
ESPN College Football Insider Brad Edwards with us for a couple of minutes. Would it surprise you if Rich Rod were not coaching at the U of A next year? And this is, I'm asking it in this term, Brad. His name is popping up all over the place with these jobs that are open. And he's done a very good job in a tough, tough basketball school, lack of football resources situation. Terrific AD in Greg Byrne. But has he done about as much as he can do? And would it surprise you to see him leave after this year?
I wouldn't say he's done about as much as he can do. I think he could build the program to be even better than it was last year. The question is, how frequently could that happen? You know, because it certainly would never be an every year thing that you would be a contender in the South. I think he can get it up another level, but the big question that has to be asked, and I don't know the answer to this, you might know better. What is his contract situation? What type of incentives are there? In other words, how much can he make at Arizona? Because I do think one of the things that you have to take in consideration there is that compared to other places, the types of places where you might see his name being thrown out as a potential hire, I don't believe there's the same pressure to win and win at a high level at Arizona.
Right.
And it really depends on the personality of the coach. And I think for some guys, like, look, if you can make $3 million a year or whatever it is, and there's not going to be, you know, any pressure to have to win a championship at least once every 3 years, or people are going to be trying to push you out the door, then I think to some coaches that's a good lifestyle. Now, if you're a, you know, ultra-competitive guy and you're all about trying to win championships, then maybe Arizona is not the best place for you, and in some place it's willing to pay you more money to, you know, give you better resources to attempt to win a title, mm-hmm. Recognizing that if you don't succeed that you might be gone in 3 or 4 years from that place. I think to an ultra-competitive guy that's still worth the risk. And so I don't know. I don't know enough about Rich Rod personally, and I don't know enough about his contract situation at Arizona to be able to give you a great answer to that question, mm-hmm. but that's kind of how I'd frame it. It really depends on kind of what his goals are as a head coach. And I do know this much, and you do as well. He came darn close at West Virginia to playing for a national title. And if that were me and I had come that close at West Virginia, I have to believe that given a bigger program with better resources that I could do it. And if, you know, if that's part of his mindset, then yeah, there's a chance that he could be entertaining some of these offers that might be coming up.
What about the Pac-12? Is it really good? Is it really bad? State of the Pac-12 from your view this year?
I don't know that it's a whole lot different than the other conferences out there. Right. I mean, I think if you're just looking at it internally, you can say, oh, you know what, Oregon has been a disappointment, USC has been a disappointment, ASU has been a disappointment, and while Utah certainly has exceeded expectations, it doesn't make up for, you know, what the other three haven't done. And so, yeah, it's fair to look at the Pac-12 and say that the conference is not as good as people thought it was going to be entering the season. But if you take a step back and you look at the other leagues, I think the same thing is true for the SEC. Hmm. I mean, with Auburn, with Arkansas, with Tennessee to some extent. Although I think Tennessee is a very good team that just happened to lose three games to other very good teams late. You know, Texas A&M is starting to look like a disappointment. As good as they looked in that opener,
right,
these last two games have kind of is starting to bring back, you know, flashes of last year where they started off so well and then faded down the stretch. And so I don't think the SEC is all that strong top to bottom. I don't think they have quality depth. And certainly, you know, some of the other conferences like the ACC and the Big Ten, you know, they don't have great depth. I think Clemson has kind of emerged as the cream of the crop in the ACC, and if they don't go undefeated, I think that'll be even more of an indictment of that conference. and then, you know, the Big Ten. Look, the one thing you can say for the Big Ten, I mean, nobody's suggesting that they're as good as the SEC or the Pac-12, but at least with the emergence of Michigan, they do have a viable third team. It's not just Ohio State and Michigan State, as we all thought going into the year. You can, you know, say whatever you want about Iowa. I still think Iowa has a lot to prove in terms of whether they're a legitimate, you know, top 10 to 15 caliber team. And then there's the Big 12, where the whole schedule's backloaded. I mean, there are four good teams in that conference, and none of them have played each other yet. They're all going to play around Robin in the month of November, so that's TBD. But yeah, I think you look around the country, and there is no single dominant conference. I don't think there's a conference that really strikes you as being really bad either. I think, for, at least in recent memory, this is about as even as I can remember these Power 5 conferences being, and that is going to pose a huge challenge to the selection committee, because what it really means is that you can't differentiate very well with schedule strength. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't, because they're in this conference, they played X number of quality opponents, whereas the one in this conference didn't have as many. I don't think that applies to this year. And so, I you know, as much as fans hate this term, I think the eye test is going to be what's going to help the committee distinguish, because I don't think schedule strength is going to do much.
Good stuff, as always. We appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks.
Thank you, Brad. Take care.
All right, let's talk fantasy football now with Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer right there at the NFL Network. Always good to catch up with the smartest man on the face of the planet when it comes to fantasy football and
I'll flip you that 20 a little bit later on after the show for saying that.
Right. Okay, let's just get right into the mailbag here. I'm getting trades, and I'm sure you get thousands of these questions. So I feel bad even bringing some of these up, but
it's all good, man. It's what I do.
Okay. All right. Steven Tucson, Carson Palmer, Amari Cooper for A.J. Green and Melvin Gordon. He has Matt Ryan as his other quarterback.
Oh, goodness gracious. If he's giving away Melvin Gordon in that deal, brilliant move. Because the Carson Palmer side of that deal is so much better.
Yeah, and Carson, he's got a bye next week, and then his schedule ramps up. That's the only thing. I'm getting these Carson Palmer questions about.
You know what, though? I mean, he's been good about against about everybody so far this season. So I'm not worried about him. That offense in Arizona is really grooving right now. They've got a great rhythm, and at this point, Carson Palmer is really matchup-proof unless you have another elite quarterback on your roster. And, Brad, let's be honest. How many elite quarterbacks are there in the league right now?
None.
Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady?
Two, three,
that's it?
Five, maybe.
You can't put Andrew Luck in there because he hasn't been an elite fantasy quarterback this year. And if you look at the games where he's actually put up some pretty good numbers, garbage time. It all counts, but I don't know. Right now, there's two guys in the elite category at quarterback for me, and neither one of them is named Andrew Luck. Carson Palmer has been much better than Luck this year.
A lot of Roethlisberger questions. What's your play on Roethlisberger right now?
Yeah, if he plays for the Steelers, he plays for you because that offense has got a ton of firepower. He's back at his full complement. He's got Le'Veon Bell back. Remember, he missed the first couple games. Mm-hmm. Martavis Bryant is back, who I absolutely love. Antonio Brown, that offense is going to score points, and they need this game this week. The Cincinnati Bengals are they've leaped ahead in the AFC North, so I start Big Ben as long as he's out there for the Steelers.
Tony in Glendale, Eli Manning or Ryan Tannehill?
Yeah, see, now, I liked Eli last week. Great matchup. This is what Eli kind of does. Like, this is Eli. He will tease you with a few good games in a row. And then he starts to throw out the stink bombs. And then you're, what the heck do I do with him now? You know, he was playing well, and now he's struggling. Tannehill's played well the last 2 weeks, although 2 weeks ago he had right around 15 fantasy points. I don't know that he's going to do that well against New England. I'd rather play Eli this week in New Orleans against a very mediocre Saints defense. It's a tough call because one quarterback's hot, one quarterback's not, but based on the matchups, I'm going with Eli.
Well, I have to tell you, Dolphins players, I drafted Lamar Miller, and I hated him for 4 weeks. In the fifth week,
you love
I said,
him now, though, don't you?
Yeah, you know, no. Well, here's the thing, because I'm an idiot, okay? So the fifth week, I just said, I'm done with you. And so I got him out of here, and I picked up Chris Johnson, because he was available. But, you know, now I'm a fool for having dropped Lamar, or not traded away Lamar Miller. It's just the way it goes with
Dolphins
players.
You know, I don't know that anyone expected Dan Campbell to have this big of an impact. And it is only two games, and it was against the Titans and the Texans, so he's not beating elite teams. If they go out and beat New England, which I don't really think is going to happen, on Thursday Night Football on NFL Network, on the road, well, okay. But the good thing about Campbell is that he's, you know, one of those old-school, no-nonsense, want to run the ball more, and that's clearly helped Lamar Miller so far over the last 2 weeks. I mean, he had, what, 14 carries? And the guy still scored over 30 fantasy points.
Right.
It was unreal.
I'm getting a lot of questions about Andy Dalton, okay? So one of them is I have Rivers and Dalton and Luck, and I'm thinking I should be playing Dalton. Where are you at on Andy Dalton?
You should be playing him. And I've been saying all year, like, I still have a hard time trusting him because I know what he's done in the past. But he's been great. Listen, the Steelers' pass defense is not all that great. Their run defense has been pretty good. They did give up over 100 to Charkandrick West last week, but overall they've been pretty good. And listen, he's hot, man. I mean, he's one of the three best players in fantasy football. How do you bench him? And if I've got Dalton and you know, this person who sent in the question seems to have some depth at quarterback, make a trade. You know, why have good players on your bench if you can strengthen another position by giving someone else a player that you're not really using?
Before I let you go, starts, sits this week. Who do you like? Who do you not like at all this week?
Well, we're going to start off at the quarterback position, and Matt Ryan is a very good play. I know he has been a little bit inconsistent lately, but I'm still playing him against Tampa Bay. Phillip Rivers is on fire. The guy throws the ball 60 times a game. That's good news for fantasy owners, so I would start Phillip Rivers. I also like Cam Newton this week, Carson Palmer, who basically is a start every single week at this point. I'm benching Peyton Manning. Until he becomes Peyton Manning. I don't know who's wearing that number 18 jersey, but it's not the dude that I know. I'm benching Colin Kaepernick this week as well. Not a big fan of Joe Flacco, even though that could end up being a shootout, but I still don't trust Flacco. There are better options out there. Running back, you're obviously starting Todd Gurley. The guy's a man-child. He's unreal. Justin Forsett's got a great matchup. Chris Johnson, the resurrection of Chris Johnson, great matchup against Cleveland. Doug Martin's a very good play. Mark Ingram's a very good play. Some running backs who have tough matchups this week. Latavius Murray playing the Jets. Jeremy Hill, as I mentioned, against the Steelers. That's a pretty tough matchup as well. Frank Gore against Carolina. That's going to be a tough matchup for the old veteran. So you may want to bench him if you have alternatives. At wide receiver, forget about what Julian Edelman didn't do last week. I had him as a sit. It was Darrelle Revis. He's playing Miami this week on Thursday night, and Miami has not done well against Edelman over the last three contests. Let's put it that way. Alshon Jeffrey's a must-start now. If Jeremy Maclin can play, he's a good play as well. Jarvis Landry's a good play this week. Wide receivers that you probably are going to play but aren't really good based on the matchups. I mean, Amari Cooper. That dude went nuts last week, but he's playing against the Jets and Darrelle Revis, so you can't be surprised if he doesn't have a good game. T.Y. Hilton, I know him. I love him. Josh Norman, that is a tough matchup against the Carolina Panthers on Monday night. And even Randall Cobb hasn't been good lately. Denver's defense is one of the best in the National Football League at stopping number one wide receivers from a fantasy perspective. So he is a risk as well. At tight end, start Eifert, who's been great. Gary Barnage, who's my boy, and he's become a fantasy superstar. I like Jason Witten, Delaney Walker, Benjamin Watson. At tight end as well. Did I give you enough? Do you want some defenses maybe?
No. What do you think?
I mean, I got them all here, pal.
You're just fine. You're just fine. I mean, if they can't figure it out after that, you know, they're done.
Well, hey, you know what? I'm trying to figure it out every week, too. Just trying to lend a helping hand.
Good stuff there. Thank you, as always.
Take care, pal.
Michael Fabiano with us from the NFL Network. We're back with more after this timeout. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports.